Virtual reality has been a science fiction staple for decades, and it always kind of looks the same. You strap on some headgear with a large, high-tech looking visor that lets you enter an alternate world. Being inside another reality has inspired films from the 80s classic Tron.
Taken prisoner and held captive within the digital world of the computer itself.
To the 2011 film Source Code.
You are inside the source code.
What is the source code?
It's a computer program, Captain.
But attempts to create a virtual reality device that people can use in their homes has never really hit it big. Now, some tech companies think they've cracked the code. The company Oculus just announced that in March, it'll release its long-awaited head-mounted display. Enthusiasts hope this will be the beginning of consumer-level virtual reality entering homes across the country. Assuming virtual reality does catch on, what would a future look like where it's as commonplace as a smartphone? KALW's Jeremy Dalmas ventured inside the digital world to find an answer.
Dude, I feel like I'm living inside of a novel, like that is the story of humanity for the 21st century. I think VR is going to be huge, and it's going to define life as we know it.
Chris Miranda is a believer. He believes in the promise of virtual reality. After decades of hype, 2016 is the year that it will break into homes around the country. And Miranda is testing the edge of what these new devices are capable of. I was itching to know what a future might look like where humans were fully immersed inside of computer worlds. And I knew that Stanford University would have answers. Right now, I'm on campus in what looks like the quintessentially boring room. Carpeted gray floors, gray walls, and low ceilings.
So welcome to the Virtual Human Interaction Lab.
Shani Bauman manages the lab. Researchers here have been testing how people respond to VR since 2003. And today, I'm the guinea pig. First, she Velcros sensors to my ankles. They'll track me as I walk. For stereo sound, there are 24 speakers in the room. Bauman straps a small view screen onto my head. This is the main thing that will immerse me in virtual reality. I can't see anything except what's on the 3D screen. She tells me when I move my head, it will change the view of the virtual world to match.
Keep your head pointed forward for a moment.
So right now I just see gray.
Right there.
She boots up the program.
Gray.
Oh, and I'm still in the room. And suddenly, I'm transported. Except it's a digital copy of the room. It's weird. I feel like I'm still in the room, and I am still in the room, but I also know pretty much anything can happen now. And it does. Soon, the floor drops out. And I'm flying through outer space. There are giant colorful balls all around me.
Am I in like the sweet tart universe? Oh, and there's a little spaceship traveling.
Just for a moment. Now if you look below you.
It's cute. And soon the room is shaking as I fly by the sun. Then I slam back to Earth. I take off the helmet and I'm back.
This is the weirdest part, to be back in the real world. My head hurts a little now. I'm not sure if it's because it was on too tight. Maybe it was because I'm just not used to virtual reality yet.
I did feel like I was in a different place. To be honest, though, it didn't seem that earth-shattering. But maybe that's the most remarkable thing about it, how naturally I slipped into the virtual world. I didn't second-guess it. But I might have if I had come here a few years ago. This headset I just used is made by a company called Oculus.
The previous head-mounted display was very big. It weighed, over 3 pounds, and it cost about $40,000. This machine here is in the hundreds of dollar range, and it's obviously much smaller. It's lighter. It's less than a pound.
VR is getting smaller, cheaper, better. And interest is exploding right now.
This is a spectacularly busy time. I've been studying virtual reality for 20 years now.
Jeremy Bailenson founded this lab, and he's seen more change in the past 18 months than in the past 15 years combined. Oculus funded its first prototype on Kickstarter in late 2012. Then, when Facebook bought them in July 2014 for $2 billion, that was the tipping point.
Sony, Samsung, Google, Microsoft, and the hardware companies are all competing right now. There is this arms race to get virtual reality in your living room first.
But we've been here before.
Fly over Mars. Take a trek through a prehistoric jungle. Tour a house that has not yet been built. It's called virtual reality.
That news clip could have been the intro to this story, but it was actually from ABC's show Primetime in 1991. In the 90s, VR was in the news, on magazine covers, and there were countless films about it. From Strange Days...
Have you ever jacked in? Have you ever wire-tripped?
...to the 13th floor.
Tower. A team of scientists have created a portal to a simulated universe.
Nintendo even made a game system called Virtual Boy in 1995. Boy.
The first three-dimensional stereo immersive 32-bit video game system ever.
That flopped and was forgotten. The technology wasn't there yet. But now, virtual reality enthusiasts are hoping for a near future where it's part of everyday life.
I do think it's going to have a major impact on the human condition in a way that, say, the printing press did have.
For Jeremy Bailenson, VR is a fundamental shift.
Psychologically, being perceptually immersed inside of a scene is very different from reading it or watching it on TV.
And he has dozens of published papers that show how effective it can be. In one experiment, they had people cut down a tree to see if that would impact their paper use. It did.
And they had to cut down this tree. When the tree fell, the tree crashed the floor and it bounced their legs. A really powerful experience. People that do this study, they call me months later and they say, Jeremy, every time I walk down this toilet paper aisle, I think about your experiment.
Experiments like that show how a virtual experience can influence behavior in the non-computer world. In another experiment, they brought in second graders, had them go to a virtual SeaWorld, and a week later,
50% of them had formed false memories, meaning they believed that they'd actually gone to SeaWorld and swam with whales. So for kids now, the technology is good enough to blur that distinction. You know, we like to say the brain has not yet evolved to differentiate a compelling perceptual virtual experience from an actual one.
How long will it be before the technology advances enough that adults can't remember whether an experience was in the virtual or non-virtual world? It's thrilling, but scary. Think of the plot of The Matrix. What is The Matrix? Humanity enslaved in a virtual world without knowing it.
The Matrix is a computer-generated dream world, built to keep us under control.
But Bailenson has more down-to-earth concerns.
What if online gambling feels like you're in Las Vegas? And what if every video game that you're playing, if you're killing people and you're feeling blood splattering on you and you're walking among the bodies? And I don't see virtual reality as a 10-hour-a-day type technology. My job is to create content that can be used for social good.
So what is that social good? I'm in a former movie theater in the middle of San Francisco's Mission District. The space is filled with virtual reality enthusiasts. Two dozen teams have 36 hours to cobble together programs that test the waters of what consumer-level VR can do. The obvious first thing is video games. But the most interesting possibilities are the everyday applications. Nancy Hall is one of the judges.
So what we want to see is we want to see healthcare applications.
So one group here is developing a training program for how to put on protective clothing for healthcare workers fighting Ebola. Another group is making a game that helps patients with physical therapy. The Army, as a matter of fact, is already using VR to help soldiers with PTSD.
They're actually taking the soldiers virtually back into a war zone and then teaching them how to deal with that stress.
There are people here working on programs to do product design within VR, browse the web in VR. There is even a software engineer from the Monterey Bay Aquarium who is working on making a 3D version of the Monterey Bay for teaching and research.
We're going to keep building on it, and eventually we're going to get deep motion integration.
The most vocal VR evangelist here is Chris Miranda. He hosts a podcast called Enter VR.
every single facet of human life that we know right now can be touched by VR, can be converged through VR. We talk about medicine, we talk about architecture, we're talking about education, tourism, sex, gaming, entertainment. I mean, every aspect of reality can be transported to virtual reality. And that, in that sense, yes, VR can make reality even better.
Miranda calls virtual reality the final platform.
It will change what it means to be a human, because eventually VR will live inside our brains and we will all transcend through this metaverse, this layer of information on top of what we already see.
Wow, yeah. That sounds like so different than right now.
Welcome to the future, sir.
Portable communicators were around in science fiction for decades before cell phones became commonplace. But so were flying cars, and I'm still hanging around BART stations. Right now, VR is all promise. The most common issue that people I talk to seem to have with it is that they want to spend more time away from video screens and computers, not go inside of them. But there's a certain itch about it that doesn't seem like it's going away. For Cross Currents, I'm Jeremy Dalmas.